day, happy Earth Day, and welcome to Detroit Today, 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for joining us. So if you ask a lot of scientists, they would say that the time for switching to a carbon-neutral world is actually running out. They say if we don't transition and transition fast, we are not going to be able to stop the world from warming by 2 or even 3 degrees. And that much warming would be absolutely catastrophic, cataclysmic, in fact, for human existence on the planet and devastating for many other species as well. But everything that we need to prevent that warming from happening is already here with us, a lot of it sitting right in front of our faces. We have the technology to harness energy from the sun, from the wind, from water. And with these tools in full use, we could reach carbon neutrality in maybe a decade. It's only our politics, the way we communicate and cooperate, our culture, that's holding us back. There is, of course, precedence for us scaling up our efforts to fight a collective enemy. In World War II, we put all of our weight behind the idea of defeating fascism. Folks at the nonprofit Rewiring America say we need that same kind of effort now, applied to eliminating our carbon footprint. Founder of that organization, Saul Griffith, wrote a book called Electrify, which goes into detail about how we get from where we are now to the idea of not drawing any of our energy needs from carbon sources. A little later in the program today, we're going to talk with two Highland Park residents who are putting ideas related to that book into action in their own community. Really inspiring story about what is going on in one of the most difficult and hard-hit jurisdictions here in Southeast Michigan. But before we get to that conversation, as part of our Earth Week series, we're going to talk with Ari Matusiak, who is the CEO and co-founder of Rewiring America, about what it would take to electrify our grid and stop using carbon as fast as possible. Ari, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Wonderful being here.
You all argue that we can electrify our entire grid, that it's not the technology that's holding us back, but the politics that are getting in our way. But we will have to change a lot in order to do that. So let's start here. How do you even know that this is possible? And how do you know that we can attain this transition in a relatively short period of time?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you again for having me on the program and happy Earth Day to you and all your listeners. I guess where I would just start is to put this into terms that are relevant for folks in their day-to-day lives. When you look at the U.S. economy overall, about 90% of our energy emissions come from the generation and consumption of energy. Yes, the cows are an important part of it, but really the vast, vast majority of our emissions come from energy generation and consumption. And of course, historically, we've thought about that from the perspective of the power plants and what kind of energy is being produced, i.e., whether it's fossil fuel or electricity based. But at the end of the day, all of that power is going to machines that we use in our day-to-day lives, where we live and work and learn and play and pray. And if you just think about our households, 42% of our energy-related emissions come from decisions we make at our kitchen table. What kind of cars we drive, how we heat our air and water in our homes, how we cook our food, how we dry our clothes. And there are a billion machines across the 121 million households that we all live in that comprise that 42% of our energy-related emissions. So if you think about it that way, there is a massive opportunity to get to address our emissions footprint just by decarbonizing the machines we use in our day-to-day lives. And our argument for that is that the only way to do that is by electrifying those machines.
And what is it that, again, is holding us back? I mean, you say politics, and I imagine some specific things when I hear that word. But put more meat to the bone for us. What is preventing us, if it's that simple, from doing more of this and moving faster?
Sure. I think there's a really, frankly, micro way to think about this, which is how we all make decisions about the machines that we use in our day-to-day lives. First of all, we don't change those machines very often. You don't buy a new car very frequently. You don't buy a furnace or a water heater frequently, a new cooktop or a new dryer. And when they are working just fine, you don't really think about them. And maybe save for the car and the cooktop, people don't have real hard opinions about what kinds of brands or appliances they want to purchase. Said another way, if your shower is warm when you take it in the morning, you think your water heater is great. If your shower is cold, your water heater is a problem. And that is sort of right in that sort of example is where I think part of the rub lies, because we don't think about these machines. I've yet to meet anyone who says to me that they're waiting for that new model of the water heater to come out so they can upgrade next year. And so these are not top of mind decisions for households and consumers. And as a result, when the time comes to replace a furnace or a water heater, it is usually in a time of immediate need.
Mm-hmm.
And so there isn't a lot of planning associated with the climate opportunity or the carbon reduction opportunity associated with the choice that you make to take a hot shower again or keep your family warm. And so one of the big barriers is just making it such that the default appliances that we get, the ones that are the most affordable and convenient, are the clean electric ones. But that's a market transformation that needs to occur.
Yeah. And you say that this is going to cost about $70,000 per American household, which is a pretty daunting number for most people when they sit and think about it. So talk about how we would pay for all of that, and how do we ramp this thing up without breaking the bank, causing some enormous deficit or debt, or putting too much of the burden on individuals?
Yeah, that's a great question. That $70,000 number reflects the all-in cost of these upgrades. But a couple things are important. Those upgrades don't happen all at once, and they are related to machines that we will use in our day-to-day lives. So when your furnace conks out, you're not going to make the decision to go without a furnace next time around, certainly not in Detroit. So we're talking about purchases that households make. And what we're really talking about associated to the electric machines, is to ensure that the delta between the cost of the efficient electric machine and the incumbent fossil fuel machine, that we get rid of that delta so that it becomes, again, that the most affordable option for you is that efficient electric machine. So what that then means is a couple of things. One, we can create front-end incentives in the form of rebates or tax credits to bring down the cost of those machines. We can also think about leveraging the fact that oftentimes these purchases are financed and these machines last a very long time. And so that creates an opportunity to bring down the cost in terms of how American households pay for these machines as they replace the ones that need replacing. But then the third thing is just that as we've seen in every other example of industrial scale, as we make more and more of something, the cost on a unit basis comes down. And that's really important because we need to achieve an industrial scale of these efficient electric machines, which will in and of itself bring the cost, the unit cost down for American families. And that is made even more true because in actuality, an efficient electric household will cost less to operate than one that is powered by fossil fuels. So if we can solve the front end cost problem through some of the measures that I just mentioned, then households and across the United States will end up saving money on their energy bills month over month.
Yeah, yeah. I'm talking with Ari Matusiak. He is the co-founder and CEO of Rewiring America, a nonprofit that's focused on electrifying America's grid. We're talking on Earth Day about the possibility of removing our grid entirely from carbon sources, from the pollutants that are helping to warm the planet and really threaten not only our existence on Earth, but lots of other species as well. We're talking about the possibilities of moving to a greener way of keeping our lights on and driving our cars and all the other things that we use energy for. We want to hear from you during the conversation as well. Call and tell us what you think it'll take to dramatically reduce or eliminate our carbon outputs. What do we need to do? What will be required of companies, of governments, of our communities, and of ourselves as individuals? What do you think is the most viable path toward a world without carbon emissions? And what would you be willing to do? What would you maybe be willing to sacrifice in order to achieve that? Do you think this is a goal that's worth some level of personal sacrifice in order to help achieve? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to the WDET Facebook page and put comments there, or you can go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation that way. Also, give us a sense of what you may already be doing, things you may already have changed in your life as a way of making sure that your carbon footprint is shrinking rather than growing. Are you experimenting with solar panels? Do you drive an EV? Are you looking into purchasing an EV? What are the things that run through your mind as ways that you can help with this crisis? As always, again, the number is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. Ari, you are giving us a 10-year window, which would take us about to 2030 by your calculations. Tell us why that year makes sense, why that window is so important.
The reason for the window is because the machines we're talking about last a really long time, 15, 20, 25 years on average. Mm-hmm. And so if we are going to have any shot at zeroing out our emissions and staying inside of 2 degrees Celsius warming, let alone 1.5 degrees Celsius warming, which are the benchmark numbers, the benchmark warming numbers for us to have basically a habitable planet for all of us, then we need to ensure that that these machines, as they are retired, are replaced with efficient electric ones. And it is quite simply a math-based analysis, which is to say that if we push out the window by which every machine that is installed and replaced in the U.S. and across the world, if we push out the window until they become efficient electric machines, then you are losing the battle of time with respect to the replacement cycle of those machines. So if we've got sort of a, call it a 20-year average in terms of the useful life of those machines, mm-hmm. 2030 becomes very important because after that time, we push out beyond beyond 2050, where those fossil fuel machines are going to be in use.
Yeah. And this idea of electrifying, I think, argues that these technological changes won't change our personal lives too much. One of the things that we've talked about several times this week is the concept that we could make these changes to alternative sources of energy without making much sacrifice in terms of the consumption of that energy, that we could live our lives pretty much as we do now, but not be relying on sources that are so polluting. So is that the right way to be thinking about that? Or should we also be thinking about the idea of energy sacrifice, that maybe we use too much and people ought to be thinking of ways to conserve?
Yeah, I think so. One of the reasons why we are so passionate about the agenda of electrifying everything is that it is both feasible and optimistic. And it is one that is about improving the baseline experience for American families and communities, it's not a narrative of adaptation or sacrifice. So just think about it. I mean, this is a Detroit-based program. Just think about cars, for instance. Ford is rolling out its F-150 Lightning. It is the most iconic, arguably, automobile in the United States, and it is it's the most popular selling car in the United States. And the F-150 Lightning looks a lot like the F-150, but it's a better car. Hmm. It is faster. It's more powerful. It can power your house for 3 days. It can do all of these things that the combustion engine Ford F-150 cannot do. It's still an F-150. It's still iconic, but it's a better car. And that is true when you think about it from the perspective of heat pumps in place of furnaces and water heaters, induction cooktops in place of gas stoves, electric dryers, heat pump dryers instead of gas dryers. These machines are better, and they create a healthier, more comfortable, more efficient, and more fun sort of lifestyle for American families and households. Now, and that's important because I think we need to meet folks where they are. If you come to people with a narrative about everything that they're going to have to give up in order to live in the world, that is not a very compelling sales proposition and value proposition. If you come to them with an opportunity to make their lives better and consistent with what they already experience, then, you know, that's more compelling. That said, of course, you know, using less stuff and using less energy is always going to be a part of should be part of the consideration and solution. But here's the thing: electric machines use a lot less energy than internal combustion engine or fossil mm-hmm. fuel machines. And in fact, electric machines are the most energy efficient strategy we could possibly have. The U.S. economy uses 100 quads of energy. That means it uses a lot. 100 quads of energy to power the U.S. economy. If we electrified everything in the U.S. economy, we would triple electricity demand, which is significant. But we would cut the amount of energy we use as an economy in half. And the reason for that is because those electric machines are so much more efficient than the fossil fuel machines they will replace.
Yeah. Okay, coming up, we're going to continue this really interesting conversation about electrifying the grid, removing it from carbon sources of energy as a way of helping to save the planet. We're talking about that here on Earth Day at the end of Earth Week, where we've had a number of really interesting conversations about green technologies and their promise. When we come back, we're going to get to your part of the conversation on social media And on the phones, Calvin and Julie in Detroit, you'll be up first. We've got a number of social media comments in queue as well. If you want to join, 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Facebook and Twitter and put comments there. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
WDET is your place for open dialogue.
The music you love.
Real news and in-depth analysis.
And cultural experiences.
The sound of Detroit.
1019 WDET is your public radio station.
You're listening to Detroit Today on 1019. WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. Our guest right now is Ari Matusiak. He is CEO and co-founder of Rewiring America, a nonprofit that's focused on electrifying America's grid. It is Earth Day, of course, the end of Earth Week, and we've had a number of conversations about really interesting technologies that could help us lower our carbon footprint. Today, we're talking about zeroing it out, essentially, taking the sources of the carbon sources of energy out of the picture altogether, and making our lives powered by electricity. Want to hear from you during the conversation as well. What do you think it will take to dramatically reduce or eliminate our carbon outputs? What will we need to do as communities, as individuals? What do you think stands in the way of us doing those things? And give us a sense of the kinds of things that you may already be doing that will lower the carbon footprint. Lots of people I know are experimenting with a lot of different things and trying things out as a way of saying, hey, I can use less energy, or I can use less energy that is polluting. As always, the number on the phones here is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Facebook and to Twitter and put comments there, and we'll work you into the conversation. I want to start with some social media comments here. Lila on Twitter says, so frustrating. Stop manufacturing the bad machines, and there is no point in replacing a gas furnace if Detroit is powered by coal. Ed on Twitter says, I made a gray and rain water system. This is a system that would take wastewater from your house as well as rainwater from outside and reuse it for things. He says every gallon of water use equals CO2. Carl on Twitter says, as a kid, my dad was always on us to turn out the lights, not because of the environment, but to save money. That's the key. Make fossil fuel energy much more expensive, and people will choose cheaper and cleaner alternatives. Europe has imposed a really high tax on gas for years. That is a very good example. Let's start on the phones with Julie in Detroit. Julie, what's on your mind?
Hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to pose a open question that I feel like isn't always talked about. Is just, you know, what have the native people of this region done for so many years? I know that they didn't have furnaces back then, or refrigerators, or any, like a lot of this other stuff. So I just feel like that's a really valuable question to keep in our minds, and maybe, you know, try to somehow work into our lives more.
Julie, I really appreciate the call and the open question. You know, Ari, we have been talking about the idea of changing the sources of our energy as a way of being cleaner, and we talked just briefly about conservation and cutting back. But I do wonder if you can talk more about examples, I guess, of conservation or change in behavior, and what role that ought to play?
Sure. That's a really important question. I think one thing I would say is that there are a couple of ways that conservation ties into electrification. I mentioned one a minute ago, which is just that electric machines are so much more efficient than fossil fuel machines. They use less energy. So you immediately have this conservation component to just the machines that we use. And so as long as folks are going to be buying refrigerators and cars and furnaces and the whatnot, we should ensure that they are as efficient as they can possibly be. And we've been sort of trained on this over the years to think about energy efficiency and buying kind of a more efficient fossil fuel machine. So you have those Energy Star stamps that folks are familiar with probably mm-hmm. that are on the appliances that we buy. And that's just basically a standard that the federal government has developed to say, this machine is more efficient than a machine that doesn't have the stamp. And there are different sort of levels of Energy Star. The problem, and that's good, but the problem with that in the from a climate perspective is that as long as it's a fossil fuel machine, it is going to be making much more emissions. It's going to be making emissions as opposed to the capability of what an electric machine can do. So I just want to stress how important the reformatting transition is, that we need to move off of a fossil fuel baseline to an electrified baseline. Once you do that, it actually opens up really exciting possibilities for further conservation. So if you think about it from the perspective of the machines in your home, if everything has plugs and not pipes, you can start to have those machines work together, and your house can work together with your neighbor's house, as a for instance, in a future state. Said another way, we become part of the climate infrastructure. So your heat pump water heater can be heated at a different time of day than when you need to use it to take a shower. Why is that important? Because if you heat it in early in the morning or late at night, you will still have hot water when you take your shower, but it will use much less energy and have much less load on the grid and cost less to you if you time it differently. That is itself kind of a form of energy conservation. And so we think about it as in terms of these machines opening up a lot of opportunity for the kind of conservation habits that we need to have in place. And then the reality of it is, I think we do need to have a cultural conversation about how we consume things and being better about the consumption choices that we make. But unless we change that baseline from a fossil fuel one to an electrified one, the conservation measures that we take will not be sufficient to get us where we need to go on climate.
Yeah, yeah. Again, Julie, really provocative question, and I really love that you called and asked that. Calvin in Detroit, you're up next. Calvin, welcome to the show.
Hey, well, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the question that seems to bother me the most, I was listening to a renowned environmentalist here recently, and the guy said that even if every home in the world were to place solar panels on the rooftops, that it wouldn't matter. According to this guy, he said it's too late. With the melting of the solar caps and the consequences of all that, he said that we have about 80 years before all the shoreline and island nations in the world are just overflooded. So, I mean, I'd like to hear the response to that. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, Calvin, I think that's a really great question, because I think, the question of agency, I think, is what you're getting at, and how much we have or could it even have over the things that have already taken place, you know, the warming that's already happened, the things that you pointed out that are really difficult challenges right now. So Ari Matusiak, talk about whether these terms like too late have real application to the discussion that we're having.
Yeah. Well, Calvin, thank you so much for listening and for your question. It is not too late. And part of our whole reason for being is that is to make sure we all understand how much agency we actually do have in determining our collective future. Because the reality is, if we switch out, if we electrify everything in the economy, switch out all these machines and have instead appliances that we use in our day-to-day life that aren't creating emissions, what that does is it stops the warming of the Earth. So the good news is that once we stop creating emissions, the Earth will stop warming. It'll take a while for it to, adjust back down, so to speak. But what's critical in the next 10 years, 20 years, is that we stop the warming trends. And that really comes back to the decisions that we make around our kitchen tables and in our communities. Because it turns out that the machines that we use in our day-to-day lives are the biggest contributors to our climate footprint and to our emissions of anything. Said another way, there is no way we can stop the Earth from warming unless we electrify the machines in our day-to-day lives.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
I was going to say there's no way to do it other than that. And when I emphasize that you're saying if we do it, it will make a difference. We do have some control.
Yeah, and I think historically the climate conversation is just so overwhelming and disconnected from people's day-to-day lives. You know, it sounds like, oh, these people in Washington need to make a decision, or they're not making a decision. There's nothing I can do about that. Or some scientist is working on some breakthrough technology. Well, that's cool, but I don't have any role in that. Or you're telling me I'm going to have to sacrifice everything and totally change my lifestyle. I don't even know how to respond to that. So typically the climate conversation has broken down in a way where everyday folks just feel like they're not a part of it. And our message is that, you absolutely are. And it's about the infrastructure that you have in your life, how you heat your homes, how you heat your water, how you cook your food, how you dry your clothes, the kind of cars you drive, or how you get to and from where you're going. That stuff matters, and turns out, the most when it comes to our climate future. So it is actually a really empowering story from our perspective. And what we need to do is make sure that our policymakers are helping us contribute so that you can participate in the solution, which, by the way, is going to get you better stuff and help you save money on your bills.
Yeah. Again, really appreciate the call and the question. Let's go to Karen in Macomb County next. Karen, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on. I just can't, not address the critical need to get people to understand how desperately we all really need to do our part in going vegan to save the planet. Between the factory farms and the slaughterhouses, they are not only is there all this sickening animal cruelty, but just the way they're destroying the environment. And then also the rainforest is being destroyed for cattle. There's soil erosion, there's, water pollution. People who live nearby these, factory farms, their water is just polluted. There's the stench in the air, so you've got air pollution. And people it's like they're oblivious. It's like, and I want to quote what Sir Paul McCartney said. And he said, if slaughterhouses had glass windows, we would all be vegetarian. And I also want to address the slaughterhouses, and the factory farms, they're never going to go green. They have zero desire or zero intention to do anything in regards to green energy.
Yeah. So Karen, I love the call, and I love a lot of what you're saying. I have to say, I'm somebody who's not vegan and has a hard time with the idea of giving up meat and other kinds of food that is not produced in a way that's carbon neutral. Ari Matusiak, how big a part of the picture are our diets and the food industrial complex, I guess, that we've built in America to make sure that we all have meat to eat?
Yeah, great question and an important one. I think how our diets, our food, that whole life cycle is obviously important for on a number of levels. Karen talked about it, not just from a climate perspective, but also from, frankly, from an equity perspective. And those are really important considerations. And there is an emissions impact to the production of food, of meat and dairy and the rest. The reality, though, is that the vast majority of our emissions come from the generation and consumption of energy. And that 90% of our emissions are really related to that. And so while the food supply chain is a really important part of the picture, it is not anywhere near as big a part of the picture as the cars we drive, how we heat our air and water, cook our food, and dry our clothes. So I think it's important that we sort of keep the whole picture in mind, and remember that all these pieces are important, because at the end we need to get to zero. We don't need to get to 10%. So we need to have sort of an all-encompassing approach and strategy. But just to say that the by far biggest driver of our emissions comes from the generation and consumption of our energy.
Yeah. Okay, Ari Matusiak, it was great to have you here with us on Detroit Today to talk about electrifying the grid. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. Happy Earth Day again.
Coming up, we are going to continue to talk about electrifying the grid, and we're going to localize the conversation in Highland Park, a hard-hit community here in Southeast Michigan. We're going to talk with someone who's working on a Highland Park project to bring green energy to that city. Stay with us for more Detroit Today.